Today's May 18th, 2023. Current Bitcoin price is $26,813.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
What's going on, Rick?
You know, the same as usual.
And we apologize in advance. It's been a little while since we've done a show. For those of you that be listening to our sweet words.
Yep. At least regularly.
I don't know. A lot of stuff's been going on in our personal lives for the most part.
Nothing major, just busyness.
Yeah, just little busy. We got a few things going on. I mean, one of the big fires right now, we've seen a lot of people destroying ledgers.
Yeah, or at least trashing ledger, right?
Yeah. Many people have been very up in arms about the whole ledger debacle. There was discussions that ledger has created backdoors for their firmware to allow people to access their private keys, or that they can access the private keys on your Ledger hardware wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what they were announcing, from what I understand, and I could be completely off base on some of this, but from what I understand, they were trying to incorporate a way to allow you to basically take your private key and you would create three shards of it. You would hold a shard of it, and then one company would hold a shard of it, and then another company would hold a shard of it. So that way, you know, even if one of those was compromised, they didn't get access to your whole wallet that way. It was just basically another level of security, from what I understand, or at least another level of security from what they were offering. And people are having a field day with this.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were also charging $10 a month to do this?
Yeah, well, I'm sure, yeah. They're definitely going to want more money to do this, right? It's another service, you know. And I go back to thinking of the gold rush, right? When they talked about, you know, if you really wanted to make money in the gold rush, you sold the pickaxes and shovels.
Well, it's kind of how Ledger's done it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've basically been selling you these devices. And I mean, and I hear both sides of it. I get some of the argument for, you know, hey, these guys are going to have access to our private keys. And I think if you're buying any wallet from any company like this, there's always a possibility for a backdoor. There's got to be some level of trust that you're giving to this company, no matter what the company is, whether it's Ledger, whether it's Trezor, anything like that, anything where it's already a pre-manufactured product that you're purchasing to store your crypto. I think there is already some level of trust that you're giving to that company. I choose to believe that level of trust, I think, is worthwhile. And I don't see anything wrong with either the Ledgers or the Trezors, but that's my personal stance on that. What were you going to say? Sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, well, you're seeing a level of trust, but what you're also saying on the flip side is a level of risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, are you going to go back to the old school paper wallets, you know?
And that just terrifies me even more so. Like,
I was going to say, that sounds way scarier to me, but...
Yeah. So, I mean, there's... I think, obviously, if we know... So, we know that there's always been hacks that have taken place. And when I say this, what I mean is, I think if somebody got a hold of your ledger, like physically, I think if they had more than just the three tries, they could probably crack it in some way, shape, or form if they're savvy enough. But I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the ledger, right? Is that even your private keys that are on there, they do not operate until you consent with the physical device, regardless of what's on the software side on the computer.
Right.
So whatever you use it in conjunction. And that it has to go to the hardware for the physical input. And that was kind of the beautiful thing about the hardware wallets, is that without the physical device there, with the private key on the physical device, giving permission to said software to use that key that one time, that's where that comes in. So, I mean, there's some, that's why I go back, there's some level of trust already in place there with that. And then I think at the same time, like when you think of large institutional companies or even individual investors, and I'm guessing here, like when I say Michael Saylor, because we were talking about this before, I guarantee he's probably got, you know, multi-sig type wallets where he does not have all the keys to himself because he's such a high profile individual. He probably has it dispersed, you know, amongst two or three people, whatever the case may be, to where it's, you know, there's an extra level of security where all three have to be compromised at the same time, which is a little bit more difficult sometimes. So I don't know. I could be completely wrong on this though, too. I completely admit that. Maybe Ledger's going to screw us all over.
Well, I wouldn't say that they're going to screw us all over, but it just kind of raises a little bit of concern because, I mean, most of the software for Ledger is open source, but like the chip and that kind of thing is proprietary. So we really don't know what's going on that end of things.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be embedding some crap in there that we would have no idea about, right?
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely true. But that would be true of any hardware wallet, right? Like I said, and I don't mean just to pick on Ledger with something like that. Anytime you buy a wallet that's a hardware wallet from a manufacturing company, that's where that question would come into play.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, I agree.
I don't know. I mean, and I think, I guess... I don't know where I would turn. You know, like you said, what would we do? Go back to the paper wallet?
Well, if all else fails, that's what you do. You know, granted, if you lost all your Bitcoin for whatever reason, I mean, yeah, besides the usual boating accident.
Yeah, aside from those boating accidents that take place. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that yet. Like, I think for me, the jury's still out. I think Ledger's just offering you another service, another layer of security if you want it, or at least another extra layer of security if you feel like you need it. And I think you have to look at your own portfolios and assess your own situations and figure out what's best for you.
Right.
Personally speaking, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't, and I honestly, I'll be first to say this. I don't know enough about some of that technology to tell you one way or the other. I couldn't tell you. To me, it seemed like it was a secure choice. I still believe it is a secure choice until I'm proven otherwise. And when I'm proven otherwise, it's going to be a costly mistake if I am.
Well, as long as it doesn't cost you any remaining crypto that you may have.
Yeah, that I allegedly did not possibly lose or not lose when fishing.
Yeah, so you got a couple dollars.
Got a couple.
Somewhere.
I got like some XRP. Hidden away. So yeah, I don't know. That's a tough call, but I've seen people up in arms about it, and I'm kind of curious. I don't know if it's overreaction. I feel like oftentimes within the Bitcoin space, there's always fear mongering out there.
Well, that's kind of what drives clicks, right?
Yeah.
In the social media era.
Yep.
So, it kind of does. I mean, just they rag on any company that does anything because just get people in a hissy fit or something, and you can kind of capitalize on it with views.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like that whatever the bandwagon may be, like if that's what's going to take to get clicks, people do it. I think we'll leave that at that for right now. I mean, until we're proven otherwise and we hear more stuff about this, I think that's about as far as I will go with it. But
yeah, I think I need to research it a little bit more.
Yeah. We had CPI numbers came out last week while I was out and about. 4.9, I think is what I saw.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
I believe that.
Yeah. 4.9. Then I saw something about how grocery prices are appearing to start to stall on price rising or increasing.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they are stalling. It's still pretty expensive in general to go get groceries. So, yeah. And you got four kids, you know, it's a bloodbath every week.
Oh, I can't imagine. Yeah. I mean, like, especially as your boys and stuff are getting older and older, right? Like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if your oldest eats enough to eat out of house and home yet. Like, but he's at that age where he would be, right?
Yeah. He could if he turned that on. I know. I did my family's.
Does he not turn it on for you so far?
He does every once in a while. It's just like, what the heck, dude? And then some days it's not that bad.
Some days he's got the hollow leg and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of moody. It comes and goes.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, the markets across the board, I think last week when I was out, markets were in turmoil. Bad. I mean, traditional stock market. Bitcoin took a pretty huge dive. I mean, not a huge dive, but it took a dive over the past couple of weeks. And I wonder how much of this is just the debt ceiling fears. You know,
that's hard to say what's happening. I was watching a video by Gareth Soloway talking about, you know, just what he's watching in the markets. And he was looking at a previous Bitcoin crash. I think it was 2015. And then he was even looking at like the 2008 stock market crash.
Uh-huh.
And the charts are looking very similar. And he's like, man, we're about to go off the cliff. He was talking about Bitcoin. So, I mean, it's hard to say what's happening. But it appears like, you know, the SEC is, they're trying to delay any word on cryptocurrencies. They're trying, you know, some states are making it more difficult. It looks like a lot of crypto jobs are going to have to leave the United States if they want to kind of keep doing crypto.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that too goes back to the SEC refusing to give clear guidance, right? Like, as much as they've sat there and said that, yeah, well, it's out there for everyone to see. It's like, well, what are the directions? Like, you haven't given any real guidance. That one in the United States anyways, but, you know, overseas, it's a different story. You're seeing a lot more of that. And maybe that's going to change, especially like, I think we had talked back in February, I want to say, because Hong Kong's crypto desk is supposed to be opening next month, I believe. Where China's going to be entering the fray again. So I don't know. I mean, we still have the BRICS nations. What's going on with those? It's a tough time, and that debt ceiling is looming and impending. And the sad thing is, I mean, as much as they want to be dramatic and everything else, you know, they're going to raise it.
Yeah. Well, they've raised it every other time before, so what's not to expect them to do that?
Yeah. That would be such a... I hate to say it. Like, I mean, really, realistically, should they know? They shouldn't. But you know they're going to, because we're in such an economic situation, such a precarious one, that they really have no other option.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't... became the president tomorrow, or the dictator, and then you just ended the debt ceiling raise limits, you're going to be blamed for the fallout that happens immediately afterwards, even if it's not really your fault.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get all of the blame.
Yeah, there would be a lot of other things that would have actually led to that, not just that one thing.
Yeah, it's like the past 20 plus years of fiscal policy is really the main culprit, but you know.
You're just the last one holding the bag, whatever it came around.
That's right.
Yeah, and I don't think the Dems want that.
Well, I don't think any politician wants that. That's kind of their whole deal, is they want to get elected the next cycle. So the incentive is to just keep kicking the can down the road instead of fixing the problem.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if we really worked in... if we had a truly free capital society, or, you know, where we didn't have all the crony capitalism going on, like, technically, as technology advances, everything should get cheaper.
That's also saying that we'd have sound money, right?
Yeah. And the free market system, like that's essentially what it comes back to is like, if you truly left as a free market and didn't impose regulations and all this other crap on it, eventually that's what happens is that your labor, everything should get cheaper.
Yep.
As time goes on.
Yeah. Capital increases and then your input costs for goods and services should go down.
Correct. Yeah. And especially with the technological booms that we're seeing all the way across the board, we're in this weird crony capitalistic society. It's not a true free market.
Well, it's not a true free market, and there's funny money. That's really what the culprit is on the rising prices. The only thing that actually does go down in price is technology.
Yeah. Yeah, but, across the board, that should be affecting everything.
No, that should be everything to a certain extent. Houses should be getting a little bit cheaper. Cars should be getting a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
I mean, cars have gotten better. I mean, you look at what you drove, 25 years ago versus what you drive today. It's actually quite a big difference. But the homes from 25 years ago versus homes today, not that much difference, but they're about 3 to 4 times as expensive,
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you're starting to see like the 3D built homes out there. I don't know if I'd necessarily want to live in one, but the production time is way reduced and your production costs, I mean, after your initial investments of the machinery to do it, I mean, they're able to build, homes from foundation to roof rafters in a matter of 4 days or something like that, 5 days with a crew of like 5 people. I don't know. I mean,
yeah. I mean, that's kind of how things should go. Like you said, technology should be making things cheaper.
But we keep on interfering with it. And I mean, and I think that's where part of that, some of that where kicking the can down the road would be make sense in some way, because eventually, everything should get cheaper. But we're not allowing that to happen. And I don't think we can allow that to happen with our economy. Because all they want is more debt. I mean, but that's our debt-based economy, right?
Right.
So, yeah. Kind of tying into that, and I mean, I know we're kind of just, there's a lot of stuff kind of that we needed to catch up on, but, playing into that too is when you look at the head of Biden's Economic Council, I want to say he was the chair.
He's the new chair, right?
Yeah. Jared Bernstein.
Yes.
He was basically, he worked on an op-ed for the New York Times entitled "Dethrone King Dollar." He's basically saying the new research reveals that what was once a privilege is now a burden, undermining job growth, pumping up budgets and trade deficits, and inflating financial bubbles. To get the American economy on track, the government needs to drop its commitment to maintaining the dollar's reserve currency status, which is, I think, really exactly what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's happening. It's just kind of crazy that they're the top guy in the economic team that they're bringing in is the guy who's saying that. Granted, if you're looking at some of the policies from the past 20 years, it's exactly what's, it's all culminating into what's happening now.
Yeah, I mean, and the United States, for the most part, really has only themselves to blame for a lot of that, too. I mean, we weaponize the dollar in so many cases. Like, what country would want to stay on there?
I wouldn't if I was another country.
I wouldn't either, especially if I was... it's... When you look at, especially some of those developing countries, what they've done to them, putting them on these loans that, with horrible terms, that there's no way they'll ever be able to pay them back. It's just like... It's funny because it's like the 2008 market crash, right? With the subpar mortgages.
Subprime.
Yeah, we're giving those the same... We're basically doing the same thing to those countries. And they're like, what do you mean you defaulted? I don't know. It's a mess. It's a mess. And we, you know, everybody's still claiming recession, if not a depression, is still on the horizon. That's not out of the cards yet.
Nope. Well, I think we've been in a recession. They just never call it that, right?
No, they, I mean, yeah. I mean, they're going to be like, oh, well, we eked a tenth of a percent in positive GDP for the quarter. I don't even, I'm sure we reported on what the, maybe we didn't, what Q1 GDP came out to for 2023.
I thought they said it was just like a slight gain. Like you said, just, maybe they even said it was like 1% growth. Which, yeah,
yeah. 1.1%.
Yep, that's what it was.
That keeps that from being a recession, man.
It's a miracle how that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. When I drive around and I look at the condition of the roads locally, and it's not just here, like Phoenix, I heard, is the same way. You know, just looking at the infrastructure everywhere, it looks like everything is crumbling and dying.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, we're not in a recession.
We're not in a recession. We just got to watch those potholes, man. Driving them center.
That's right.
Yeah, otherwise you pop some tires. But yeah, is there anything else you wanted to bring up today?
That's it for now, but we'll definitely come back and talk again sooner. So we'll have, you know, a few less topics to cover at once.
Yeah, sorry. This one's a little bit long-winded, but there was a lot of stuff that we missed, so. Thank you all for listening.
Yep. Bye.